Hey everybody, Max here, and before we dive into today's episode, the live episode, which was recorded back on September 24th, 2017, that's this past Sunday at the Complex on Melrose, I just wanted to give a couple more thanks. At the end of this podcast, we thank the people who helped us, and I really just wanted to reiterate my thanks for Jeanette, Kim, Liz, Riley, Jess, Sydney, and Sarah, and of course, my love forever to Allison, who co-hosts this podcast with me. This is the last episode of season two. We had such a great time, such a great turnout for both shows this past Sunday, and we are so excited to be working on season three already. It is already in the works. We already have discussions for our next live episode, what the Bit Tree of History is going to look like in the future. We're looking to maybe add some new team members, and we're really just diving in. We want to make sure that the next season is even better and bigger than we've ever done before. In the meantime, we have launched a new podcast. If you missed the very first episode of Bitch With Me, that was available a couple weeks ago. And the next episode is out today. You can find Bitch With Me, episode 2, Hillary Clinton Owes Nobody Nothing, on iTunes. You can find it right now on the Bit Tree of History feed, but then in the future, you're going to be able to search Bitch With Me in the iTunes Store, Android Store, Google Play, Stitcher, Podomatic, all the same exact places where you find the Bit Tree of History, and you're going to find it there too. So for now, have a great fall. This is Max signing out until you hear me on Bitch With Me.
Of the Bit Tree of History. It's our season two finale. It's a podcast that was started by Max and myself.
Yeah.
I guess we should sit down and talk into our microphones.
Yeah, so probably.
How about that? Then everybody that's listening that wasn't awesome enough to buy a ticket or is listening anywhere else in the world, not in Los Angeles, will know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So we wanted to take a quick minute and just bring you guys up to speed. What is the Bit Tree of History? What is this podcast? Who are we? What's happening?
Where am I?
So Max is enjoying his brownies and cider. So I will tell our story. Max and I have known each other. You eat your brownies, man.
It fell and I saved up.
Oh, great. Amazing. This is why you want Max to be your producer on everything. He will save your brownies, literally.
I made these. Thank you.
Max and I have known each other since freshman year of college at UNC Greensboro.
Yep.
We were in the same acting class. Oh, my God. We were theater majors. How would you ever know?
Right.
We were paired together in our final scene, and we killed it,
yep.
I must say.
Yeah.
So we go back a long, long time, and when Max moved out to L.A., we were hanging out, and we were just talking about, I don't even know.
That movie.
Well, it spun out. It spun out as somehow we were talking about feminism, because what else is there to talk about? And I was saying I really wanted to make this movie called Banging Lainey, and we are actually in the middle of crowdfunding for that film right
we
now.
Are.
Max is an associate producer on it. We hit our 20% mark today. We launched the campaign on Tuesday. So if you guys are interested or curious.
20% is like $12,000 we've raised in like 4 days. Right? Right?
So it's pretty great. The entire movie is really sex positive. It's really about empowering women and young women, especially to take control of their own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want more information, you can check out. I've got a little QR code. I was so technically savvy.
Yeah.
And what's really great about Banging Lainey is that not only did Allison write it and is producing it, but a woman is directing it. Another woman is producing it, just like Bit Tree of History. I mean, you'll notice that I am the only man who's on stage tonight, either on stage or actually behind the scenes as well. I mean, Sarah's over there, Kim, Jeanette, Liz and Riley. All of it's personal with women as well. And so it's we're really big on that, trying to just do as much as possible.
Yeah. So check it out. And then out of the discussion on this movie came, there's all these awesome women,
mm-hmm.
and why have people never heard of Marie Curie? I'm so upset about this, and what are we going to do?
Right.
And I said, we need to start a podcast where people can find out about all these amazing women that I was very fortunate to grow up hearing about, but other people don't know their stories. And so then we started this podcast, and we are going strong season two.
Season two.
Woo-hoo!
37 episodes in season one, 26 episodes. This is our 27th episode of season two. So that's like 120-something women in total.
good, bad. We've done serial killers and pirates and ancient Egyptian queens and, yeah.
Because that's something else that we feel really strongly as well. It's important not to just highlight the awesome, amazing women throughout history, but to acknowledge that, you know, it's not always the men who are villains.
Feminism is about understanding that there are bad women, too.
Equality.
Exactly right. Yeah. I do also want to know, before we start getting into the women, this happened just by accident, but Daisies are the school for our alma mater. For UNC
what?
Greensboro. Yeah.
Oh, I think I did know
that. And
that
just happened out of nowhere. So I just wanted to point that out.
Hashtag producer. Okay.
All right.
So you're going to start off with your woman, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Sorry, I had to
typically we record in Max's apartment, so this is per usual. He's always snacking on something, which is great because he's making it for me too.
Yeah, well, we realized very early on that if I didn't eat before or during a thing, that I got really cranky.
Mm-hmm.
So today I'm going to be talking to you about this lady right here. Her name is Vera Finger, and she was born.
Hello. Banging Laney is the movie, not the podcast, right? But,
oh, I didn't even go there. But okay.
I am surprised that I'm the one that went there. It's usually the other way around.
I don't know what you want from me.
Not that.
All right, so she was born June 25th in the late 1900s. So she was born to two people, to a man and a woman, obviously. but they were more upper... They were more upper crusty, and they had serfs, and so she actually lived a pretty not that bad life.
Wait, hold on. Where was she born?
She was born in Russia.
Okay, yes. Serfs, so I wanted to check.
Oh yes, yeah, she was born into the Russian nobility, and she was the oldest of six children. Her family owned over 1,000 acres of land worked by serfs until this big thing happened called emancipation in 1861, where they basically passed a law that said all of the serfs are no longer serfs. And all of their, Vera writes at one point about how her she was really upset and her mom was really upset that the two people, they're like her two personal serfs, just up and decided that they wanted to go live with their families after they were emancipated.
Oh, how dare they?
And they went and got married and had children and lives of their own. And it really messed up their home life. So by the at 11, Vera was actually sent to a girls' school, like an upper crusty kind of prep boarding school. And she talks about how she hated it because it was very like they taught about penmanship, and she was learning all these things that just made no sense for the kind of life that she wanted to live. She was being basically bred to be a good wife and to hang out. And she talks in a memoir. And when I say she talks about these things, I'm talking about much later in her life, she published a memoir about her life, which is where we get a lot of the information about her. And so what she did was, because she wasn't happy about her school, is that at night she'd sneak out of her bedroom and she'd start reading banned books. And there was this one teacher that she said she would make the rounds at night. And she was a very religious lady. And whenever she would come into the library and see Vera in there, Vera would just get down on all fours and start hitting her head on the floor like she was praying. Like she was all the way down in like prostrate form. And she said she'd just pretend to be praying while really she was like hiding the banned book that she was reading until she felt the presence of the woman no longer behind her. She graduated from that, and she decided that she wanted to become a doctor. She wanted to go into medicine, but of course this is Russia in the late 1900s, and they said, no, we don't want any female doctors for some reason. And so she had to go to Zurich in Switzerland, which had this program that was accepting women of Russian birth, even if they didn't really have the qualifications, because they knew that there was a need for it in Russia, and they were just going to take whoever was willing to come and be a doctor. And so she went there, and this is really kind of when her radicalism starts. If you don't know, we're talking about a terrorist here, Vera Finger.
What?
Who ended up killing someone. So
get
excited for that. Yeah, you didn't see that coming, did you?
No!
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. So her father...
This is why we never know about each other's women, so then the reactions are genuine.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah. So she studies in this department, and she joins this group called the Fritsch Circle. It's Fritsch or Fritchy or something like that. And they studied... It's, I don't know. And so she studied, they studied social and labor problems. So essentially studying the history of socialism and how it was enacted in countries around the world. And they started distributing propaganda leaflets until this Russian newspaper, this government-backed Russian newspaper, published these op-eds about these girls. And they were saying that they were using their medicine education not only to do illicit acts on each other, but that they were also giving themselves abortions using their own medical expertise, which was just patently not true. But it did end up pulling a lot of the Russians, a lot of the Russian girls, including Vera's own sister, left Zurich and went back to Russia, where they just went on distributing leaflets and distributing pamphlets and doing all this subversive acts until most of them were arrested, including Vera's own sister. We know of the fates of five of them. Two of them were sentenced to exile in Siberia. One was exiled to hard labor, including her sister. So her sister and another were sentenced to 5 years of hard labor in a factory. And then the other was imprisoned for like 9 years.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Not very fun. And so they... So eventually Vera gets this message from Fritsch saying, hey, all of our people are arrested. We kind of need you to come back and help us out. And so she does. But by that point, the group is so depleted that there's nothing really for her to do. So instead, she uses her medicinal training to become a paramedic. And under the cover of her being a paramedic, she started going into the countryside and not only healing people, so using it to actually work on people, but she also was saying, hey, you know about this little thing called socialism, let me tell you all about it. So she was being subversive and she was passing on all this information and trying to overthrow the government and being a healer. And she was actually known really far and wide because she was one of the only female healers of this kind, and she actually got this reputation for being magical. They called her the She Healer, and people would bring her water and oil for her to bless. There's a story of a lady who says that as soon as Vera touched her, her abscess disappeared. It healed immediately. And Vera talks in her memoir later about how she was seeing these people who were living. She gets to see the horribleness that these people are living in firsthand. And she's seeing people who are like having migraines for like 7 months at a time, just nonstop. People who are bleeding for months at a time. People who are having all these different ailments that today we could solve in like 2 seconds. And they're just living with them constantly. And it just kind of drives her more and more and more. And so eventually she joins another group called Land and Liberty. Things are going okay for a little bit, but then there's a schism between the members of the Land and Liberty. And in this schism, it's between two rival factions in them. And some of them want to say, hey, the way that we're going to change things in Russia is to distribute information, to say, hey, we have to get all of the people, all of the common man up to our level by just teaching them. And eventually, if they know what's happening, then, you know, they'll decide to revolt. But the problem with that is most of them didn't know how to read. And so if you distribute a bunch of pamphlets and no one knows what they say, right? And so the other group was like, no, we just need to start blowing things up. There was a terrorist group and a pacifist group, essentially. And Vera joined the terrorist group.
Which group do you think I would join?
You'd be handing out leaflets left and right.
All right.
Would you be blowing things up?
I don't know, man. It depends on the situation.
That's fair. And so the two groups join. She joins the terrorist group. They go off and they join what's known as the People's Will. And she becomes an officer, essentially, in this group. And it's run by a man named Andrei Zelyabov. Sorry if anyone's Russian here and I'm murdering these names.
I just want to interject so quickly and tell a quick story in which we really do try and look up how to pronounce all of these things. And sometimes the internet is helpful and sometimes it's not. And one time I went on YouTube and was like, how do you pronounce this name? Which had just a lot of consonants. And the YouTube video literally says, pronunciation, I-X-N-G. you're just naming letters, YouTube. That's not how you say any words. So we try our best.
Yeah. And so this guy, Andrei Zelyevov, she doesn't like him. And she says, quote, he had not suffered enough. For him, all was hope and life. She wanted someone with a little more grit.
Oh, no.
And so they had, so they decide that the best way to effect change is to kill the Tsar. And they say, we're going to kill Tsar Alexander II. And so they start really going at it. And they have several unsuccessful attempts, including one where they somehow set, they got a bomb into the palace. And during this time, Russia is in like this state of revolution. And really, if you want to think about it, Russia's been in a state of revolution since forever. And so there's the guards are not even at the palace. Like they talk about, she talks in her memoir about how there were no guards at the doors. So literally anyone could just walk into the palace. And at first the people in the people of the people's will were like, well, why don't we just walk in and kill him in his sleep if there's no one guarding the door? And Vera said, no, we want to make it more public. It needs to be more gruesome. It needs to be bigger. And
we need to make a statement.
We need to make a statement. Essentially, we need to make a message. And so they get a bomb into this party. Which ended up, the Tsar ended up being late to. The bomb goes off, kills 67 people.
What?
But not the Tsar. Right? So they decide that they're going to, they know that the Tsar takes a regular Sunday drive. And so they go, okay, well, we're just going to wait on the road until he drives by. And we're going to lob some explosives at him. And so they start planning this. this assassination, and then the secret police find out about it. And so the secret police find out, and they start interrogating members of the people's will. They start arresting them and interrogating them. And they come in. No one gives up any information. But what they do is the Tsar starts changing up the street that he takes his regular Sunday drive on. And so what they did is they just put people on all the streets leading out of the palace.
That's a lot of bombs.
It's a lot of bombs. And what's great about it is that Vera said, oh, I guess not great, but what's...
That's what I was thinking. I was like, really? Seems like these bombs are not so good.
Well, they made them in Vera's house. She volunteered her house for them to make all of these explosives. So on March 1st, 1881, they put a bunch of people on a bunch of streets surrounding the palace. And they ended up choosing the right street because the Tsar came out. There were three people waiting, three of the people's will people waiting, including one woman, not Vera, another one, named Sofia Perovskaya. And they all, two of them throw the explosives, they miss, but they kill the people who, yes.
So all three people have bombs?
Yes, they all have explosives.
So Vera let them build like 100 bombs in her place.
A lot of explosives in her house. You're not building any explosives in my house if you decide to go down that route.
Nope. Nor in my house.
Okay, we'll find somewhere. The
NSA is listening to this podcast.
Sarah, shut it off. So they throw the bombs. They miss the Tsar, but they kill two of his guards who are guarding the thing. And the Tsar goes, well, that's weird. Gets out of the car to check on the people. And the third guy threw the bomb. The explosive was so powerful. Not only did it kill the Tsar, but it killed the guy who threw the bomb as well.
See, that's what I'm saying. These bombs are not good. It's the late 1800s. Don't be throwing bombs.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have grenades at this point. They just had full on. I'm thinking like Wile E. Coyote with a, like a thing of TNT and a clock just going at it. So the night after the assassination, the members of the people's will, they gathered at Vera's apartment. And Vera says, quote, I was so overwrought that I could barely summon the strength to stammer out that the Tsar had been killed. I was sobbing. The nightmare that had weighed over Russia for so many years had been lifted. The dawn of a new Russia was at hand.
Mm-hmm.
So the Russian secret police, they begin tracking down the members of the people's will because, I mean, they've just killed Tsar Alexander II. And Vera eventually by the spring of 1882, so not just about a year later, she ends up being the only member of the executive committee that's still at large, and she becomes the head of the People's Will. It's much depleted at this point, but she is now in charge of this ring. She organized another assassination of a member of the secret police in Odessa in March of 1922. And she also started rebuilding the underground apparatus to start distributing propaganda. So she commissions the building of a printing press, and then she continues to conduct propaganda note at universities as well. Until February 10th, 1883, so a year later, when she was exposed by another member of the People's Will, who exchanged the information in return for a lighter charge for himself. She's arrested. And she, at the time, she was not only characterized as one of the most dangerous criminals wanted by Russia at the time, but Tsar Alexander III wrote in his personal diary, quote, "She was finally caught." That's how much she frightened these people. So after her arrest, they kept her in solitary confinement in a fortress for 20 months. That's a year and 8 months in solitary confinement all by herself. Exactly. And she was sentenced originally in 1884. She was sentenced to death. And then Alexander III. So we don't really know why her sentence was commuted, because she wasn't put to death. She was eventually commuted to perpetual penal servitude, which is a big favorite of Russia, exiling people to Siberia and stuff like that. From the research that we can find, the idea is that Alexander III thought that it would be a greater punishment if she was in penal servitude than just being put to death. For some reason, she was moved a couple times, so she ends up being imprisoned for 20 years. And then she was moved for some reason to three different cities, and then she was let go. And that information we don't really have, because the records really aren't that great, and she doesn't really talk about it all that much in her memoirs, why she was let go, because she didn't know. But eventually she was allowed to go abroad, and she went on a speaking tour in Europe to a bunch of different cities. And then she immediately went back to spreading propaganda and her populist message and doing everything that she'd done 20 some odd years previously. She joined the Socialist Revolutionary Party. And then in 1907, but then left in 1909 because she found out that one of the heads of this party, which was supposed to be another like revolutionary party in the same vein as what she was doing before, was actually a double agent who was a soldier for the secret police in Russia. So she said, well, okay, deuces, bye. And she returned to Russia in 1915. And then 2 years later, the People's Revolution started by Lenin, and then starting the Bolshevik Revolution and all that stuff, which we've talked about in other episodes of The Bitchery of History, so you should listen if you want to know more about Russian history. And she published a book, Memoirs of a Revolutionist, which is where we got a lot of our information, and also some other sources as well for this. She had her collected works finally published in 1932 in Russia. So it took a full, another 20 years or so before they were actually published in Russia instead of just all around the world. And then she died at 89 on June 15th, 1942, after surviving the regime who's one of the heads she killed and who had imprisoned her for more than 20 plus years.
Wowza.
Yeah. So that's Vera Finger, an amazing, amazing badass woman. So tell me
that's
about
crazy.
Her. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to talk about Anne Bonny.
Okay.
She is a pirate.
Yes.
And we have one picture of her, but I didn't print it out because my printer is terrible. And now you're like, look at my picture. And I'm like, well, I decided that was silly because it wasn't going to look good.
We'll put one on Facebook. You just search The Bitchery of History. You'll find our page.
Yes. And we have Instagram. We can put it up there, too.
Oh, yeah, that, too. Yeah.
But there is pretty much only one picture of her, I do believe. I grew up hearing about her because North Carolina, where mm-hmm. I'm from, where Max spent a lot of his time growing up, mm-hmm. there's a lot of pirates. Blackbeard's ship crashed off the coast of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That's where he buried all of his treasure.
Yep.
So I knew about some of these female pirates while mm-hmm. I was growing up. So I recognized that picture. and Bonnie, you guys, it's a ride. Get ready. So all of our information on Anne comes from Charles Johnson's A General History of Pirates, published in 1724. She was born in Ireland sometime between 1697 and 1702 as Anne Cormac. Mm-hmm. She was actually the illegitimate daughter of her father and their housemaid, Mary Brennan. And obviously when she was born, the family was like, yeah, that's not cool. You gotta go. So he moved to London with with Anne's true mother, Mary, mm-hmm. and decided, hey, while we're living in London, why don't we dress up Anne as a boy and call her Andy? That's normal. There's no explanation for why that this was a thing, but it was. And then somebody figured it out and was like, that's not a boy. That's a girl. What are you doing? So he's like, I'm moving to the Carolina colonies, obviously.
Yep.
So he moves over there again, bringing Mary with her, but Anne's mother died, Mary, about when she was 12. And William attempted to kind of establish himself as an attorney, and then he was buying and selling some land, and he did okay. He bought a plantation just outside of Charleston, but he wasn't the greatest, if we haven't figured that out already from the story so far. Now, Anne, during this time, about 12, 13, she was being described as a good catch, but she had a very fiery temper. At 13, she apparently stabbed a servant girl with a table knife after an argument. And there's some other accounts that she beat up a boy who would have, quote, would have lain with her against her will.
Oh, good.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
And people,
yeah,
that is right.
Absolutely.
Reports even say that she beat him so badly that he was hospitalized for months. But I mean, good on you, girl. That's
talk shit,
what you
got
to do. That's right. Later, when she was about 16, Anne eloped with a ne'er-do-well, a.k.a. a pirate, named James Bonney. He kind of had hoped to win possession of her father's fortune, but his father was like, no, you're a pirate. I don't want my daughter to marry you. Please go. And so she decided, you know what, Dad? That really pisses me off. I'm going to burn down the plantation. So she did.
What? Okay.
Whatever. You won't let me have it? You can't have it either. I guess that was the attitude.
A proportional response.
Right. This account isn't totally verified,
sure,
but it's awesome. So why not bring it up?
Sure.
Now, sometime between 1714 and 1718, Anne and James Bonney moved to Nassau, a New Providence island in the Bahamas. This was actually called the Republic of Pirates at the time. Like, all the pirates
lived
there.
Oh, my God.
You've seen Pirates of the Caribbean,
oh,
right?
Oh, when Tortuga, they go for the council.
Basically, that's where
that's
she
so
was
cool.
living. Now, while she was there, the governor of the Bahamas offered the king's pardon to any pirate that would come forward and basically give information on another pirate.
Oh.
And James said, great, I want the king's pardon. I'll come tell you about all my pirate friends. And Anne was like, what?
Yeah.
No, I'm a peace out.
Good.
Yeah, don't turn on our friends. So she left and met this pirate named Calico Jack Rackham, with whom she fell in love.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, Calico Jack then went to James and was like, hey, your wife likes me. I want to buy her from you, which is normal in pirate culture.
Oh.
But James said, no, thanks. So
I don't want to sell my wife to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I guess was his right. I don't know.
Pirates are sexist.
Well, it turns
Maybe.
Out James then told Governor Rogers that Anne was in love with Calico Jack, and the governor said, okay, well, then let's get Anne and let's flog her. And then that didn't happen, luckily, because their gay friend Pierre, who ran a brothel, helped them escape.
Yes! I need a gay best friend.
That's right. So Anne then begins sailing with Calico Jack. She disguised herself as a man, and they're sailing on a ship, which some people say was called the Vanity. Some people say the ship was named the Revenge. Other people say the stolen ship was just called the William, which is way not as cool
no,
as
that's
the Revenge.
Boring.
They preyed on Spanish treasure ships off of Cuba and kind of all around in that area. It's reported around this time that Anne became pregnant with Calico Jack's baby and had the baby in Cuba and then was like, I'm going to go be a pirate again.
Sure.
So we don't really know what happened with that kid or if that really occurred, but it's part of the story.
Hmm.
Now, meanwhile, back in England, there's this other chick named Mary Read, And she starts dressing up in men's clothes in England in order to hold better jobs. Duh.
You do what you have to.
Right. And join the army. Okay. And then while she was in the army, she fell in love with this other soldier. And she was like, hey, I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm a lady. It's cool if we're in love. So let's do this. And he was like, all right, that's chill. And then they decide, okay, we're going to go hop on a Dutch merchant ship. We're going to go to the Caribbean because this man passed away. So she's like, I got to get out of Dodge. Everybody knows my secret.
Mm.
While she's on this Dutch merchant ship sailing to the Caribbean, they get taken over by English pirates. And so she was like, this is great. I'll be a pirate. So she sailed with them for a time. But then Calico Jack's ship finds the ship Mary Read is on.
Okay.
Mary Read and Bonnie are both dressed as male pirates,
uh-huh.
and they're fighting each other, and then they're like, wait a minute, I see you, you're a chick, right?
Uh-huh.
So am I. And then they became great friends.
Yes.
Obviously.
Where's the movie?
For real! We say that all the time about these women. It's
yeah.
like, I want to see this scene. So it's reported now, you know, Mary kind of joins the crew. Some stories and sources say that Anne and Mary and Jack had a very open three-way relationship that
Good.
Everybody knew about, but nobody cared because they're pirates.
Right.
So, like,
question
whatever.
Question them.
Now it's
Anne
also
stabbed
reported.
A lady.
Well, hey, listen, because that's kind of what happens next. So Mary fell in love again, apparently, with another pirate on
uh-huh.
the ship. But when his life was threatened by another crewmate in a duel, Mary picks a fight with his opponent first and kills him with her sword and pistol, ending his life before he could harm her boyfriend.
What a badass.
So, like, ladies, look out for your man.
Right.
Have a sword, have a pistol. It's fine. Now.
I don't think you need a permit to open carry a sword.
I really don't know. Something to look into, I guess. Anne was known for taking part in combat alongside Anne had the respect of all of her shipmates.
Uh-huh.
She was named as a wanted pirate by Governor Rogers.
Okay.
She never commanded a ship on her own, but she was known by many, many pirates in the Caribbean. Now,
okay.
Anne and Mary were also really fierce pirates. It's reported by the crew that was with them that they were the most violent and were the most like, we're going to go
awesome.
Wreck some people, get with us. Now, the crew knew that they were women. They would dress like women on one ship, but then they would change if they see another ship coming,
oh,
and they're
okay.
like, we got to fight.
Sure.
Then they dress up as men
sure.
and be like, everybody go to town.
Right.
Now, in October 1720, the Vanity or the Revenge
or the William,
whatever you want to call the ship, was anchored off of Jamaica when a British Navy ship surprised them. And
okay.
the male pirates were all drunk, and they all went and hid below deck,
no.
leaving Anne and Mary by themselves on the top deck to fight off literally an entire
yes.
ship full, no,
oh.
of English soldiers.
Okay.
No, because there
oh,
are only
it's just
two
the
people,
two of them.
And it's a whole ship. And they reportedly are yelling at the men, quote, come up, you cowards, and fight like men. And the dudes are like, no, we're drunk. We're going to hide in the hold.
Bunch of
so
scallywags.
Of course, they,
that's
they were arrested. They were arrested because they couldn't
sure they
hold
were.
Yeah, they couldn't hold
yeah.
out that many people. So Captain Jack and all the male members of his pirating crew were
uh-huh.
tried in November of 1720, and they were all sentenced to hang.
Okay.
Anne visited Captain Jack in his cell before his execution
uh-huh.
and said to him,
oh my
quote,
God. Quote,
had you fought like a man, you need not have been hanged like a dog. End quote. Mic drop. Right?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, she's not wrong.
She's not.
Anne and Mary were then both tried a week after the hanging, and they were also found guilty, but they both were like, we're pregnant. You can't kill us. It's illegal to murder a baby. And so everyone was like, that's legit. We won't hang you. I mean, it could have been true. It could have not been true.
Sure.
There's plenty of women who are like, don't. I'm going to have a baby. And
right.
then they were like,
I mean,
no, I'm not.
If that's what people are, if you're going to use what you should got
use what you
got
to use. Hey, use your feminine wiles.
Yeah.
Now, the end of the story is a bit hazy.
Of course.
Some people say that Mary died right. shortly after in 1721 due to a violent fever before
uh-huh.
her child was born. Others say she faked her death and was snuck out of prison. There is no record of her execution, so all we know for sure is she definitely was not executed.
Okay.
There are some rumors that her wealthy father forgave her for burning down the family plantation and bought her release after her child was born, and she settled down on an island. Some say she moved to the south of England and opened a tavern and bragged to the locals, like, hey, I used to be a pirate. Come buy my beer.
Right.
Then others say that Anne and Mary moved to Louisiana and raised their children together. So a lot of different stories going on here.
Yeah.
Now, according to the Oxford Dictionary National Biography of 2004, Anne's father did pay the ransom for his daughter and brought her back to the States. Then she gave birth to Calico Jack's child.
Okay.
And less than a year later, she married someone named Joseph Burley. They had 8 children together, and she died on April 25th, 1782 at the age of 80.
Sounds like a typical pirate story. Like, maybe it could have been one of 1,000 things.
That's what the Oxford Dictionary says.
Sure.
Her piracy only really lasted a year or two along with Calico Jack, and she was really considered like a second-class pirate. You know, Blackbeard and all these other people I hear about are a little more well-known.
Sure. No Jack Sparrow.
But had it not been for Anne Bonny and Mary Read, Calico Jack would probably not have been remembered at all.
You know what? Good. He should have fought.
Right?
Yeah.
That's Anne Bonny.
All right. So we do women like this all the time. And in fact, if you go out, when you go out to the lobby, there's all that art on the wall there. Those 6 pictures right in the front. Sydney Tannenbaum is here. She did all the animation. She did that little the drawing of the girls from It's Personal as well. Mm-hmm. And every one of those women, if you ask me after this, we can both tell you the stories of all the women that are there as well. So let's move. Let's bring out our special guests, shall we?
Let's do it.
Yeah?
Our first time with special guests ever.
I know.
Excited.
This is actually a night of many firsts. So you know them from about an hour ago. Liz and Riley of It's Personal.
Woo!
All right. So we're really excited. Like we said, you guys are the first guests to ever be on Bitchery of History. So this is a really big moment. How do you feel about that?
There's so much pressure.
Yeah.
So we really just wanted to highlight, first of all, you two for the amazing show that you guys just put on as well. Can we have another round of applause for all that show that we just saw? Yeah. And all the ladies of It's Personal did such an amazing thing. And I know that this is a thing that you guys have done several times now. And I guess my first question is, where did this begin? I mean, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about where we met. And I guess our first question is, where did you guys meet? And where did you come up with It's Personal?
Riley's idea. Well, we met at Columbia College in Chicago. We had a couple classes together. We both decided we wanted to move to LA, so we became roommates. And when we were roommates in LA, we were young and poor and had nothing going on.
Classic story.
Yeah, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment. And I was like, Liz, wouldn't it be awesome? Remember when we did solo performance in college? Because it's kind of a big thing in Chicago, but it's not really a big thing in LA. We didn't really see much solo performance out here. And I was like, wouldn't it be awesome if we just even got a group of people together just to write and share stories? And Liz was like, that's such a great idea. Let's do that. And then we never did it.
Also a classic story.
Yeah. And then
3 years later,
I texted Liz and I was like, hey, remember when we talked about this? Let's actually do it. So then we decided to actually get people together and do our first show, which we thought maybe we'd just have people together to kind of write and share stories at our apartment or something like that. But then we actually put on a show. And now this is our fifth show.
This is our fifth show. Wow. Our year will be November 29th.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Time flies.
Yeah.
And each It's Personal has had its own theme, right? So what have been the 5 themes?
Not all of them.
The first one didn't. The first one was kind of like, it's personal. What the hell are we doing? The second one was love.
It was in February, so love themed.
Then Regrets was 3. And then the Fringe, we did the Hollywood Fringe Festival, and that one we kind of just did whatever you want to do. And then this one was ladies themed.
Yeah, so just all ladies.
Awesome. Fantastic. What was it, I guess, what was it like putting that first performance together? You said it was kind of like, it's personal. What is, do you think it was shaped at all by the fact that you, I mean, you two are both women show producers? I mean, did that?
This is a great question because Riley and I actually talked about this. Because when people said, like, what does it feel like being two women that are running your own production and now we have, like, an LLC and everything, like, what does that feel like? And I never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to create art. And when Riley approached me, I was like, yes, please. I just want to make art and I want to let people have a voice. And I know Riley feels this way, too. Like, we just want to be heard. Everyone wants to be heard, and especially with your art form.
And everyone has a story to tell.
Everyone has a story to tell. I mean, there's people in our show who aren't actors that are a part of this. And I think that was, like, the big thing. What was your other part of your question? I missed. I went on a tangent.
Well, I think that kind of, like, what shaped our show, our show, we were in rehearsals, and then the election happened. And our first show was a couple weeks after the election. A couple of the people on our show had some more, like, politically charged pieces. That really affected our show a lot. We started every show, we have a charity that we donate to. Just like tonight, we have a charity. That's a huge part of our show, is just trying to give back, because we saw a need for that. And so we're just kind of trying to create a space, like, where we see a need for something. I don't really know. We've never really thought about it being, like, us being women having anything to do with that, but that's just kind of, like, our philosophy with
and
it's personal.
And it's funny because Katie is our stage manager and does our tech. She's a woman. And then we look at Kelsey, who does our crew, and she's a woman. Sydney, who's our business manager and does our programs for certain shows. She's on both shows. You know, it just happened to be all women behind the scenes. And it was just, you know, Monica, who runs the complex. You know, it's just kind of all worked out that way. And it's been really awesome. And
we just seek strong women without even realizing that we're doing it. Yeah.
Which is kind of awesome. But yeah.
I have a question that's not on the paper. Because it was occurring to me, we've occasionally covered some women on the podcast who are still alive. And I always feel when I'm talking about someone who's still living, I have this fear, like, oh my God, they're going to listen to the podcast. And, like, I hope I'm doing them justice. And I don't know. And it freaks me out. And I can't imagine talking about myself on a podcast. How do you feel about sharing your own stories? And how do you find women who are willing to come up and share some really... it's personal stuff.
Yeah. For me personally, tonight was my hardest piece I've ever shared. That was the roughest one. Usually I like to have fun and do things like my love for cheese, and I eat cheese on stage. But this one for me was tricky because it just happened. But I think there was, like, a need for me. You know, it's funny because I would always talk to Riley. I was like, maybe I should write. No, I'm not going to write a piece on that. No, I'm not going to do it. And I kept going back and forth. And Riley was like, you know, every show you bring it up and then you decide not to do it. I think, like, you need to say it on stage so that you can get it out. And it's very cathartic. And then you feel like, oh, you have power over that thing once you say it. And I don't know if you feel that way, too, but, like, for people who want to be a part of the show, it's because they're like, I need to share this because it's, like, inside me and I don't know how to tell anyone. So this is, like, a way that you can tell everyone.
Yeah. Every time I've finished, just the first time I'm able to say my piece in front of an audience, it's released. And it's like, finally, I feel like I'm able to release it into the world and that it doesn't own me anymore. And kind of what, like, your piece, mine, was talking about mental illness. It's something I've been wanting to do since we started. And I haven't really been able to, like, write the words down. But it, like, is something that, it's like when it keeps calling you, you just want to do it. And like you said, we find people that really, really want to, they have something to say. And they really want to get it out there. And it's scary. It's not easy. We cry almost every rehearsal.
I cry every rehearsal.
Yeah, it's, I mean, everything is is so much. I mean, it's personal. That's the name of the show. Yeah. Like, it's so intense to get up here and be so vulnerable, but it's so worth it.
And we just have amazing people who are like willing to put themselves out there, which is so beautiful. And we couldn't ask for a better rotating cast every show. It's amazing. Yeah.
Before I ask my question, I just wanted to take a second to really thank you both for the stories that you told tonight. I mean, they were both very personal and very, I brave, I mean, honestly. Yeah, just thank you for your stories tonight. And for all the ladies who shared their stories. And I guess my question is, you know, you've talked a couple times now about how this is it's always a performance that has both actors and non-actors. And I guess coming from an acting background for the both of you, what is that like? What does that change about the process? Do you think it brings something? Do you think it changes things? You know, how does having non-actors and actors together change the flavor?
Well, I think that it's nice because as actors, there's a lot of, you know, there's classes we take, there's lots of different things, and especially in LA, there's lots of acting jobs that you get that aren't necessarily creative, and it's really nice to have, like, a breath of fresh air with people that are just, like, writing down a story and telling it, and I think we kind of have this, like, thing where we don't want to edit ourselves before we say our piece at our first rehearsal. I'm like, please don't say how
it's
terrible
really
you
bad.
Are. Yeah, it's really bad. I'm not really a writer, but it's like,
I don't know about the second section, yeah. But just, I don't know. It might suck, but.
Because they're always so good and everyone has something important to say. And it's true across the board. I've never felt like someone didn't have something meaningful to say. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's just important that people come from different backgrounds in different, you know, that people who aren't necessarily performers or who have maybe never done it before really give the best, like, raw performance that they can. And you kind of see them light up afterward, having someone come up to them and say, I really related to your piece. Like, that's all it takes is one person to feel connected to it for them to really feel that kind of, like, excitement about performing.
Yeah. Awesome. Agreed. Awesome. Yeah.
So I guess our final question for you guys is, what's next? Where do you go from here? Do you have any thoughts, any ideas, any plans, other than our next collaboration, of course?
Oh yeah. Please, I mean, well, we're obviously going to do this again. We're hitting our year November 29th, so we're talking about doing a show in November. Okay. We just had coffee about it. And then Riley actually suggested this idea. Because we've done so many beautiful pieces, I think it's time to, like, almost archive them. Mm-hmm. And she thought of the idea of almost doing, like, a podcast and releasing pieces. So if anyone misses the show or can't make it, you can just kind of be like, oh, I want to listen to Riley tonight. Oh, let's check out Chelsea or Kelsey. And we'll see how that goes.
I think there's something beautiful about our first rehearsals when someone's just reading their piece, because as much as it is cool to come to a space and see it performed, just hearing the words can be really moving for us in our rehearsals. So I think
it's
that
very raw.
It would, yeah, maybe just hearing it, or we've talked about doing a book. I don't know. We have lots of ideas.
I really want to do a book because I want to put Andy's poetry in there. Really bad, Andy. Andy, how about you just write the book? Just forget the rest of us. I think there's going to be more shows to come, and we just want to keep performing and reaching out to people. Yeah.
And if anyone ever wants to be a part of it,
email us
at itspersonalonstage@gmail.com. We would love to have anyone
be a part of the show.
Be a part of it.
We have people in the audience right now who have been in It's Personal.
Yeah,
yes.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
There's like an alumni.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Well, yeah, thank you so much. Should we do our regular outro?
Outro? I love that phrase.
The Vitry
that word.
Of History. The Vitry of History is a production of Ursula Major Productions.
You can find us on all the social media at... Oh,
they've
it's
changed.
New.
Yeah, they're new.
Oh, no.
On Facebook, you can search The Vitry of History. On Twitter, we're at BOH Podcast.
Or is it Vitry Podcast?
Bitches podcast.
On I know, because you guys are liking all my tweets right now.
The Bitry of History. It's Personal. What are your handles?
Oh, great question. It's Personal on Stage for Instagram and Facebook. And Twitter, it's Personal LA.
All right. All right. It's Personal was taken. Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's personal on stage is too long for Twitter.
Oh.
Yeah, so we, like, already had the website because it's personal.
That's
stuff.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah, and it's personalonstage.com is our website. You can see all our past performers. You can, like, see what our next show is, and all that information's on the website as well.
Beautiful.
I want to give a huge shout out to our crew who helped make this night possible. Sarah is over here. She's our sound engineer for the night. Mm-hmm. Sarah is here with a camera. She's taking video and pictures. Mm-hmm. Kim and Jeanette are really two that they made tonight happen, really.
Yeah,
so
ladies.
Kim and Jeanette. Jess, who's our social media director, Sydney, who we've talked just endlessly about tonight and I'm hopelessly in love with. Keegan, Stefan, Dan, and all the other people who help make Bitchery happen every single week. We love you and we couldn't do without you.
So true.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. Thank you for putting giving us a platform.
Oh, anytime. It's been an absolute pleasure. And as always, we end every single podcast with the same phrase, and that is
Bitches get stuff done.
So, can we get the house lights?